Golf Smarter number 126 for May 13, 2008.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Custom club maker, Michael Clark.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week we tap the best minds in golf to help lower your scores with tips, drills, insights, and advice. In conversation with course pros, architects, authors, players, teaching gurus, and coaches, here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for joining us for another adventure in the expanding world of golf information. This is the Golf Smarter Podcast. I received an email recently from Christian DeLauro of Oxford, England, who explained that he was coming to San Francisco on vacation and requested that we played golf together. Oh, how cute. Anyway, the timing worked out and we had a great time. We went out to Harding Park, which will be hosting the President's Cup in 2009. And you know what? We both played like crap. It's a beautiful course, but I got to tell you, it's probably the hardest 122 slope I've ever played. Come on, guys. Redo this course. That plays more like a 137. Eesh. But thanks again to Christian for asking, and if I ever make it to England, hopefully we'll get a chance to play again together. I want to share an email I got from Michael Hamill of Canada, who writes, "Hey, Fred, I played at Heritage Point with a slope of 132 from the black tees, and with a client of mine, Ross, his friend Mike, and my boss, Jeff. Now, Mike shot a 110, Ross shot a 101, Jeff a 96, and drum roll, please, I shot an 81. Good job, Michael. Last year, he shot a 98 at this course. Well, listen, I can do that in 2 weeks in a row on the same course, too. But from the first tee off, all the inner voices had said to me, golf smarter, golf smarter, golf smarter." And this is Michael writing. "Each of the guys used their drivers on all the par fours and fives. I was so tempted to crank out my new FTI, but I resisted. As a result, they each lost more than 8 balls. I only used my driver twice and pulled out my 3-wood and my rescue 3-iron off the tee most of the time. And oh my God, was that round fun. So Fred, I'm blaming you again for another great round. I've dropped my index already this year from a 15 to a 12. Golf smarter. Golf smarter, golf smarter. The moral of the story, of course, golf smarter is not just the name of the show. It's a mindset on the course, y'all. Okay, enough of that. Michael Clark is one of golf's great characters who has a unique perspective and one that I'm really excited to share with you. Along with his dog Shivas at his side, I went out to his shop to learn more about what he does and ask some questions that you've sent in about club fitting, grips, and a whole lot more. Welcome, Michael.
Hello, Fred, and it's great to have you in my shop today.
Thank you. Let's start with your shop. This is a unique place for you to be doing business. Why don't you give me a little description of what it is?
Yeah. Well, Fred, you're here, and you can visualize everything that you do see, but I am a home-based business, and that's quite different than a business that might be what we might call a brick-and-mortar or a commercial site.
Sure.
But I'm a home-based business, and I custom-build golf clubs here. So I have only a 3-second commute to come over into my shop. And so what you see here is, unfortunately, we get stigmatized being home-based club makers, that I have converted a garage space into a livelihood.
So your garage space here is probably no more than 10 by 15 at
well
most?
Well said. Yep, it's 11 by 17. Nope, I have 189
good.
Square feet.
You know, and that's probably how my putting goes too. I think it's 10 feet and it's actually 12 feet. So that's the last time anyone ever asked me for advice of how far something is away from where we are. But you have, it's a cozy little spot, and you're not computerized at all. It's all your hands, right? I mean, you got a little TV and a cassette player over there, no computers in sight. You do have a cell phone, I noticed that.
Uh-huh.
But let's take a little tour here of what you got on this table. Here are our club heads. But actually, before we get into that, I need for you to tell me a little history about this garage, because you told me a great story. We're in Berkeley, California. A great story about this space and the space that it occupies next to it.
I have a neighbor who returned to Berkeley that lived here 30 years ago. So he grew up directly across the street from us. And on the opposite side of this wall used to be the rehearsal studio for Jefferson Starship.
Jefferson Airplane.
Right. That's right.
When they were a garage band, basically.
And they started as a Hot Tuna. And actually, this piece of memorabilia is about the only thing. So we can date this thing, this item that's called Love Thy Tuna for Hot Tuna.
Sure.
Maybe about 45 years old. So
wow.
If anybody from
and that was found here on the spot when you moved in?
It was in the middle garage space.
Awesome.
And
awesome.
I moved
All
it
right.
over here.
Let's get back to golf.
You bet.
I love rock and roll history. So so on this table here you have club heads, various club heads, some grips, and three shoe boxes filled with 3x5 cards. With a lot of information on the 3x5 cards. And I guess this is not just your inventory. This is your database of your clientele.
As simple as it is, yeah. But I am a home-based business, and nothing in my shop is pre-assembled. So mm-hmm. as a custom golf club maker, what I will do, or the services that I offer, is to custom build golf clubs, but I do a lot of repairs. I do a lot of re-gripping. I have a bending machine that's made by Ed Mitchell at Mitchell Loft or Mitchell Golf, and this is, you know, just in my opinion, the top of the line loft and line bending machine in the marketplace, and it's a fairly expensive item when I bought it. But now I have adjusted close to 600 sets of golf clubs on this machine.
Wow.
So you're right. We're looking at a table in my shop. And so what I do, I have laid out my components that I sell. And as a professional golf club maker, I think that the thing that makes me professional versus maybe somebody who's stigmatized as somebody who is in a garage is I have my own component lines. So I'm not selling product that will try to mimic or look like a TaylorMade product or a Callaway product or a Karsten product. I have my own individual designs that I get from very well-known companies like Tom Wishon's at wishongolf.com.
Mm-hmm.
And
we've talked to Tom many times.
Mm-hmm. And
wealth of information.
Tom is... just in my own opinion, and of course I will have this slight bias, but he probably is the number one club head designer in America today, bar none. I believe that anybody at any of these companies like Titleist or TaylorMade or Nike would love to have Tom on board, but Tom wanted to have his own individual club head designs and sell them to the club maker that would individually fit the golfer. So I have all this integrity in front of me. I use other suppliers like Swing Science. They have their own individual unique designs. I use a product formerly from KZG. KZG was not so intrigued by my business format. They don't like to sell to the home-based business. So they wanted to dump me, and so be it. I respect their business model, but that doesn't reflect on me as a club maker in the least. But I use some products from Toski. I use products from Louisville Golf. I use golf products from SMT. So, and I use products from Infinity. So there's a wide number of companies that do provide components to the independent club maker so that they don't have to sell these knockoffs or clones.
That's where I wanted to go. Mm-hmm. And the difference, and let's educate consumers, including myself, because I am a golf consumer, on the difference between knockoffs and custom components.
Mm-hmm.
Please explain that.
Well, there are only three basic components in a club head, in a golf club. We're going to be dealing with a head, a shaft, and a grip. So companies like Callaway, for example, there are only three components in their club, and it could be a driver or a putter or a hybrid club or an iron, whatever it should be. But Callaway has invested a lot of research and development and time in developing their own unique characteristics or designs in their club heads, as has Tom. So what happens in the industry that creates this dreadful phenomena, let's call it, is the notion of knockoffs and clones. And what are they? These are copy components made to look identical or replicate exactly what they are, but they're not. It's a fake Gucci bag.
It's a facade. It looks like the paint, the spray paint's the same, but
so somebody can go
what
out
goes into that the material to put that component together is completely different. Is shoddy, perhaps?
Well, it may not meet Callaway standards for certainty, for sure, mm-hmm. You know, but these products are only made to mimic or look like a Callaway product and to sell in the marketplace for a much greater reduced value, you know. But people, it's really ironic, will buy that product because it looks like a Callaway. So what has Callaway done? Sure, they put tons and tons of resources into designing their own components and promoting them in the marketplace, and so they have something to protect, and they are actually a very, very aggressive company legally to get the knockoff component suppliers out of the marketplace. And it's really quite amazing that you do have such a large number of people who will buy a knockoff product only because it looks like a Callaway.
Right, right.
And unfortunately,
it's got a big X on it. Yes. It looks like the Callaway X. Oh, well, it must
identical.
Be good. Yeah.
And so I think independent club makers that have a lot of integrity respect what Callaway and all these OEM companies do have, because to tell you the truth, the more that they prosper, the better it is for my business too.
Sure.
Because I get all these clubs coming in, and you name it, I've had them in the shop, whether it's Mizuno or Brigstone or whatever. But I get to fix them. I get to do the loft and lie adjustments. I get to re-grip them. Mm-hmm. So there's a marketplace for me that helps the OEMs keep their products in the marketplace. And so I benefit there. But I also benefit by building my own golf clubs using these components.
And you were saying how the OEMs, the manufacturers, don't have a lot of respect for these knockoffs, and understandably, and it gets litigious, I'm sure, at times. And you have a lot of respect for the OEMs.
Absolutely.
What is the feeling of the OEMs toward the custom club maker? Do they feel infringed upon, or do they don't even pay attention to it?
Actually, I do believe, in all honesty, they do embrace us, because they do realize the role that we play in the golf marketplace, okay? And if I want, I can go and purchase their products through certain suppliers like Grips. I could be reselling their putter grips. I could be selling their grips, for example, mm-hmm. and re-gripping their clubs. Sometimes I may be required to go out and find their shaft. It would be really nice, like a company like Karsten, who produces the Ping clubs, would be more amenable actually in their relationship with professional club makers like myself. But in all honesty, they are a tinge selfish in being real proprietary and trying to be protective of that marketplace, because I have had a brief instance where I have dealt with John Solheim, for example, and I know that he has a profound disrespect, I believe, for independent club makers. But hey, I can't tell you how many sets of Ping irons that I have adjusted on my machine. And I'm doing a huge service to Ping, which they could not perform themselves.
So the professional club maker, they must really be very careful about what they're doing, but they also have to set some sort of standard to make sure that the consumer understands that they're not trying to rip off Ping or Callaway, correct?
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that?
Okay. I do believe that club makers like myself can be stigmatized by the OEM industry because they're afraid that I am selling product that would infringe on their patent rights, okay?
Right.
Or to sell product that looks like theirs. But there are
or knockoffs.
Or knockoffs.
What
or
we're
clones.
Talking about, right.
Yep. But I'm a great believer in professional organizations, and I would endorse anybody who is in this industry to consider joining the Professional Club Makers, for example, in Louisville, Kentucky. And I was a member there from 1996 to about 2003. But while I was there, I did become chair of their ethics committee. And at that time, a few years ago, there was a very, very contentious issues in the marketplace that club makers like myself were selling knockoffs and clones. I mean, it was just flourishing. But I know that club makers have a great sense of integrity. They want their own component lines. They don't want to infringe. There's plenty of marketplace for us all out there. And I was fairly instrumental in drafting what was called the Ethics Pledge Statement for the Professional Club Makers Society. And one of the most operative aspects of this pledge statement was that I pledge not to advertise, build, or sell any golf club which knowingly violates any trade dress, trademark, or patent right. This is really, I think, for the golf club maker with integrity, says a lot for those individuals. Now, if you're a member of the Professional Club Maker Society, this is now even on your sign-up card. That statement is there. You make this pledge. And this is fairly profound.
And is there a way of enforcing this pledge? I mean, can you guys pop, you know, other club makers?
I think we could, but technically it was never really done. You know, we're not walking into people's shops to see what they're selling.
Yeah.
We just got to take it on faith that if they're signing the statement, they're endorsing it.
So what is the difference then between club makers and club fitters?
Mm-hmm. Well, it could be fairly a synonymous term. But we might think of the notion that club fitters have a process where they will actually fit a golfer in terms of like their individual playing characteristics or their athletic abilities for the golf swing. But as you see in my card file, I've had about 2,000 golfers in my shop. And some of these guys may look the same in their golf swing, but every one of them is different. Mm. They're all unique, truly. And so the fitting requirements for every individual is conceivably different in terms of like the club head design that they might be attracted to, how fast they swing their club, how they load their shafts, what would be an optimal playing length for them, what's a grip style that they like in terms of texture and feel, fit them for grip size, so that eventually when a customer comes into my shop who wants a set of golf clubs, says, Michael, please fit me for a set of golf clubs, and let's just take a set of irons specifically. I have developed a process over the last 10 years that works for me so that in this very cozy environment, I try to impart as much education to my golfer. And for them, it's a real learning and empowerment experience so that eventually when they get a golf club that's made for them, they know exactly why they got what they got. There's no mysteries.
So then step
fitted
one
for them.
So step one is to get fitted.
To get fitted.
Fitted.
Yes,
and then
definitely.
Step two would be have clubs either purchased or made for you.
Well, that's
but
the other option.
You need to get fitted first, correct?
Yes. To me, the whole notion that somebody can walk into a pro shop and buy that set of clubs off the rack, it's just a foreign concept for me because eventually they're going to come to the club maker anyway. They're going to get their lofts and lies adjusted to get set. And then I have people who want to sort of back into the fitting process, say, hey, I just bought this set of clubs. I want to know if they're fit right for me. What can I do?
Well, I went to a retailer, and I walked into their big cage with all their video screens and their cameras, and they said they fit me for a club, okay? And then they made recommendations on my ball flight based on what their computer showed them, and they made recommendations on types of clubs that I should be purchasing. I look in your shop here, And as we talked about, it's not 10 by 15, 12 by 17.
Right.
And I don't see any video monitors. I don't see any computers.
Right.
So was I properly fitted for a club just by standing in front of a computer and hitting off of a mat that had a computer screen or something, a mat attached to a computer that told him my ball flight? And what is the process? What do I need to know? How do we gather the correct information to decide what my club should be? And what is that information?
Mm-hmm. Well, that is a fairly profound question that really defies a one-minute answer. But I will
this
say
is a podcast.
This
you've got your time. We got plenty of time.
Well, Fred, it is a great question. But the whole idea to, let's say when there, what's really popular in vogue today is launch monitor technology.
Right.
And there is a lot to be said for that. Now, I personally own one of the most sophisticated pieces of fitting technology in Northern California. I have a ball launch monitor from Swing Dynamics. The unfortunate thing is I don't even have a place where I can set it up. So what good is it doing me? But I do think that the launch monitor technology has a most profound impact on fitting for drivers.
Mm.
Now, the irons may not have to go to that level of testing to be fit for, but launch monitor technology, it's great. It really is. And I want to have mine up and running. But I have developed my own system of fitting golf clubs from using, you know, something that gives me swing speeds. And knowing that information that I derive from witnessing a person's golf swing and seeing how they load the shaft and using static measurements. So I have a fairly basic fitting system that I've developed over time. And every club maker will have a different kind of fitting system that they've developed. But if I have my launch monitor up and going, I know my fitting system would be completely different. But anyway, that being said, I do know that, for example, somebody with a relatively slow swing speed that doesn't load their golf club too quickly needs a little bit more help getting a club in the air. And if we're talking about a driver, we want a club that has a lot of loft in it to help get the ball up in the air. Then I know, too, what kind of shaft would be best suited for that golfer based on its the stiffness of the shaft, whether it's like a ladies, a senior, regular, or stiff flex. And I know the playing characteristics that are designed in these shafts. And I also know, like, its overall weight. So, and what would be a fairly optimal playing length for that golfer. So there are things that even though my fitting system is fairly organic, it's fairly basic, it works. And I've gotten tons of satisfied customers, and I built a fluency and a lot of confidence in building drivers for people and in irons.
And what about getting fitted for putters?
And putters the same. You
really
do want to be fit. The, you know, you walk into a pro shop and what do you get? And there's the big name putter, and it's one putter fit for all. And it's totally impossible that could happen. So what happens is the guy basically has to adjust his putting stance to kind of make that putter work optimally because it was only designed and it is one finished product. But what the club maker can do, and here's a machine that I spent $975 for. This is a putter bending machine from Ed Mitchell, Mitchell Golf, for bending putters.
Hmm.
So I can adjust the lofts and putters. I can adjust the proper lie angles. And sometimes what I'm doing to fit the putter to the golfer is I may even put an extender in a putter to make it longer, or I can cut them to length. I can take off that grip that came with the putter and you had no choice. I got a great grip selection, as do most club makers around the country. And then it's all about texture, feel, and all of a sudden a golfer gets to hold on to enough putter grips and they say, oh, this one's perfect. Let's put it on that putter.
Mm, mm.
And so you can be fit for your putter and have a putter built for you.
We've received emails, and I have a couple emails from listeners, but I've received numerous emails from listeners who are just starting to play the game, and they have purchase some used clubs, and they're just, and now they're hooked. They love the game. They want to play more. They want to make the investment in purchasing clubs, but they're not sure if they should start out taking lessons first and then get fit for clubs so they have a swing that they're comfortable with, or can they just go ahead and get fit for clubs and then start taking lessons? What would you recommend?
Actually, I would recommend that they do both simultaneously. It really depends on how quickly they want to get to building a good golf game.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we can definitely fit the introductory golfer. And there are components that are designed to help somebody who's just coming into the sport. And then I will see different levels of skill in the golf swing. So their component requirements would change. And I think that that's what's fit or what's key about the fitting. But, you know, at first when I got into this business, I was so shy about saying I was a professional club maker and people would come in with their clubs. Well, now, having been here in this space for 12 years, I know that when I look inside people's golf bags, it is a piece of cake to beat what they're playing. I find out what the gaps are in their games. You know, they've only got, they got a full set of irons and one wedge. They've got a mix and match set of shafts. They don't have the same bending properties, flex, anything. And I, you know, I have such a profound respect for this wonderful, great game and people's relationship. I understand that. And this is that one sport that gives them so much pleasure, but there's a lot of things in people's bags that are holding them back from enjoying this game optimally.
Interesting.
So it's really easy to help every golfer out there. Every golfer who's in the marketplace really needs a relationship with a professional golf club maker.
Okay, well then I guess the obvious question to go from there is if I were to walk into an Edwin Watts golf store or any other retailer, I would find that golf clubs, big name brands, Callaway, Mizuno, Ping, TaylorMade, Cobra, wherever, it's going to cost me between, let's say, $600 to $1,500 for a set of irons.
Mm-hmm.
What's it going to cost to have a custom set of irons made?
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I'm comparably priced.
Okay.
To tell you the truth, in
I think that's a revelation for a lot of golfers.
Yeah. Well, I think, to be candid, is that I would like to be charging a lot more for my clubs, but the marketplace won't bear it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I feel. So I don't have the guy who's got a lot of resources to spend. I'm trying to, every golfer is welcome in my shop, and they don't have those kind of resources. But ideally, I would like to be charging more for my clubs because I really do believe that they're worth it. I know what my cost basis is, but I just don't think that the marketplace bears it. So mm-hmm. I think that actually the cost of my clubs are somewhat artificially low relative to my cost basis. And
is it relative to other club makers? Or you can't even speak. Can you address that? How other club makers, if they're generally comparable to retail product? Since we're talking about ethics?
That's a good one. You know, there are a lot of people come into this business because there's a romance to what we do. But it does take a number of years. I could have apprenticed and been a lot more prepared for building my own business. But I self-taught myself, and that was my strategy.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a prodigious reader of golf journals, golf books, knowing my industry, being a member of the Professional Club Maker Society, personally knowing people like Tom Wishon and experts like that. So anyway, you asked earlier about being a maker, and I take a lot of pride in my craftsmanship.
Clearly.
That is the big key. But I really believe that there are a lot of people who are doing this purely as hobbyists or building their own clubs, and when something comes in, I can see immediately the quality of the work that was put into it.
Oh, as we were here getting set up for this interview, somebody walked in. They brought in a club that a friend gave them. It was a driver, and he wanted to put a bigger grip on it.
Right.
And you took the grip off and immediately could tell that this was not a good quality and asked them to leave it here with you for a while.
Right, because what had happened, they wanted to build up the tape underneath to expand the size of the grip for a golfer who has very big hands. But they use this gray tape, this gaffer tape. And I have witnessed that this stuff melts in high temperatures and then it turns soupy underneath and the grip starts. That's just really poor craftsmanship.
Hmm.
But there's so many things that club makers know that they can incorporate in their product. The good club makers, you can tell.
Let's do a couple questions that
Go
we
ahead.
Have from listeners.
Great.
We're running tight on time now, but here's one from Richard Hickey in Laconia, New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he's about to attend his first ever demo day.
Okay.
At a local nine-hole course. And a number of questions that he had, are there do's and don'ts that he should know about at a demo day?
Okay. What I've learned and witnessed from demo days that I've been to is that a certain supplier of a certain product will be out there on the golf course to sell that product. And you might have five clubs that are absolutely identical in terms of their lofts, their lengths, their supposed flexes, and everything. And then eventually what happens for that golfer is he swings that club and he finds, oh, this is perfect. This is great. But they're not going to sell you that club. Then they'll say, why don't you go inside the pro shop and now buy one of these? But they won't let you necessarily buy that club. Mm. There may be lots and lots of different ways that they handle demo days, or they may take an order for that club. But then that club that you end up getting is not the one that you were hitting with before. Because for OEMs, they mass produce their clubs in a way that the frequency of the shaft is not the same in every club.
What do you mean by frequency?
Is the flex or the stiffness of the shaft,
okay,
or the bending property of the shaft, or how that club was oriented to maybe be that shaft is in an optimal playing position. These are real technical things, but they add up into what makes each and every club so individual in and of itself. So the club that invariably somebody tries is not the same one that they're going to end up getting.
So does that mean that demo days can be more confusing to a consumer than helpful?
Downstream it could be.
Yeah.
This is just, yeah.
But how do we get the most out of a demo day? I mean, purchase anything that day, obviously.
Well, no. I'd say that I would have an understanding with the person that if I really like one of these clubs, can I buy that club?
Mm.
And I had that particular experience, and I went out there, and I'm hitting this club, and I'm hitting 175 every time. Couldn't miss it. So I wanted to buy that club. They wouldn't sell it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that if I was at a demo day, and I finally glommed onto a club that I really liked and adored, to have an understanding ahead of time that you're going to buy the club that you like the most and get a commitment from that guy that they'll do it.
Hmm. All right. Now, here's a question I think is real interesting, and I think you'll appreciate this question. This one comes from Sebastian Sutton, who's in McKinney, Texas.
Okay.
And he says he has a friend who would like to have a persimmon wood shaft replaced with real wood.
Wow.
Any idea on how to get a wood shaft?
Indeed. And in fact, that we're dealing with some esoteric here. That's a really, really niche industry. But
it's possible?
Oh, yeah. There's a guy in, his name is Kennedy, and he's in New Hampshire, I believe,
mm-hmm.
or Vermont. But he's one of those purists that deals in.
And you've got one right here.
I just happened. It's just pure chance. But these are just on display for customers to appreciate.
Well, this is, and we didn't even talk about the museum aspect of what this small garage space is, and it's incredible. You gave me almost an hour-long tour of the memorabilia that you have on the walls and the ceiling in here. But let's talk about this club.
Yep. Well, this is a bygone era. But there are people who have such a purist relationship to the game, and they may want to play. There is even actually a hickory society, so that if you maybe did your research online, you could locate this society. And then from them, you could probably get a ton of information that would lead you in other directions. But Mr. Kennedy, and I believe he's in Vermont, in the state of Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
I know him personally, but you catch me by surprise with the question.
Sorry.
But it's a great question. And, the fascinating thing, too, about hickory is that the bending properties, these things just will not break. It's just really fascinating. And then if I can tell a quick story about
love stories.
Bobby Jones, that apparently the story is he could never hit his 6-iron. And here he was hitting a set of hickory shafts. So eventually when we had this modern technology to go in and spec out his clubs, they tested every club in the set, and they frequency matched perfectly throughout the whole set except for the number 6, which was goofy. And that's the one he couldn't hit. His 6-iron, it just didn't match up. What an incredible revelation.
Wow.
So,
well, Michael, do you have a website?
I do.
Oh, good. Where
Thank you very
that?
Much for asking.
Oh, absolutely. Where can people find information about you, and about how to find local club fitters, mm-hmm. and custom club makers?
Mm-hmm. Well, great. Well, relative to my website, it's clarkcustomclubs.com. It's all one word, clarkcustomclubs.com.
C-L-A-R-K.
Mm-hmm.
Customclubs.com.
Mm-hmm. And I actually have a new website that's being constructed to reflect the changes in my business, and it's more updated, modern. It's like, but a great way to find club makers is by going to your Yellow Pages.
But these are people who are online, and now you said mm-hmm. that there is a society here, the Professional Club Makers Society. Do they have a website where people can find
that's
local?
That's right. They have a locator.
Great.
And another great way is the Professional Club Makers Society has a locator. And another thing is that you might, for example, be really interested in Tom Wishon's product at wishongolf.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has a locator
of
people who are club makers that are selling his product. And I have had people from Seoul, Korea, said they were coming to a Sun Microsystems conference. But meanwhile, I built them 2 sets of golf clubs while they were here.
Awesome.
So my golf clubs are in Seoul, Korea.
Very nice.
Yeah. So locators are a great way to find club makers.
Okay. Very good. Well, and if anybody wants to communicate with Michael directly, please get in touch with me. Click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarterpodcast.com and forward me your question, and I will make sure that Michael gets it. And if he's able to respond to me, I will forward the question back to you. It's the easiest way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Michael, this has been absolutely fascinating and a great education. We appreciate you spending this time with us. Thank you so much.
Yes. I think for the customer that they build this bonding relationship with club makers because they're intimately involved in their game. And that's one thing that I do. I build relationships. And one thing that I do is I learn my golfer's relationship to the game, what it means to them. I'll even have this most profound question. And if you had one word to describe your relationship to golf, what would that one word be?
Love.
For you it's love. But I can ask 100 different golfers and get 100 different responses.
Yeah.
So a relationship of the golfer to the club maker is imperative. And that's why my relationships are so special. And in an intimate relationship like environment like this, there is no disconnect. I embrace my golfers. I show them how I build my clubs, how I grip them. And it's a real educational experience.
Here, you know what I think is phenomenal about this? Think about this for every person who's listening right now. And there's only one listening at a time. But think about having somebody that you can go to that wants to hear about your golf game.
That's right.
I mean, think about it. You go home. You want to talk about your game that day. Your wife doesn't want to listen to you. Your husband doesn't want to listen to you. They want to talk about their own golf game. You get together with your buddies. They want to talk about their own golf game. But if you have a custom club maker, he's really interested in your game.
This is true.
And he's going to take care of you, and he's going to help you and build the club that you want. What a phenomenal relationship to have for a golfer who's so passionate about the sport anyway.
That's right.
What a great opportunity. Mm-hmm. And as you said a few minutes ago, it's not going to cost you that much more, if anything more, than what a normal set of clubs are, and you'll be much happier in the long run. Great education.
I couldn't have said it better. I hope you put that in the interview, because it's really key. It's great. And I think the last thing I'd like to say is that somebody anywhere could definitely call me if they wanted to and had a question. They could call me. My phone number in Berkeley, California is 510-841-0972. And if they have a clubmaker question or are looking for a clubmaker in their area, I'd be glad to help them as much as I can.
And please make sure that you mention the Golf Smarter podcast when you call Michael up, and make his phone ring off the table.
Well, you know,
it's a cell phone.
I've been tickled
right
pink.
Off.
This has been a real fascinating few minutes for me. And thank you so much for coming in, Fred.
You're welcome. Thanks so much, Michael. You know, last week, Golf Smarter was reviewed on That Podcast Show, which is a regular program that reviews other podcasts. It was the first sports show that they'd ever discussed, and even though they listened to a Golf Smarter Tips show with Kirk Jones, they called it Golf Smarter. Is that confusing, that we have Golf Smarter Tips and Golf Smarter? I hope it isn't to you. And if you don't know, we have two different shows. There's Golf Smarter Tips, which is weekly with a couple different people, and it's a short show. And then, of course, this is Golf Smarter. Anyway, they had some nice things to say, so thank you very much for doing that review. And, you know, there's plenty of time for you to enter to win a Frankly Frog putter designed by Frank Thomas. To enter, go to golfsmarter.com, and on the navigation bar, there's a word that says contest. Just click on that and fill out all the information. Deadline for entries is May 30th, 2008. And recently, we asked you to provide some product reviews of gear that you have won. Now, they've started coming in. You know, click on that Hey Fred button and write your review, and we'll post them each week on a Wednesday on the Golf Smarter blog. And please read what the average golf consumer has to say about gear that they've received for free, just like journalists. You know, journalists get all this stuff for free, and they're pretty jaded about one thing or the other. But I think that you guys have a very unique perspective on getting a piece of gear and falling in love with it or hating it, because if you don't like it, you can put it away. You know, you stick it in the garage. You don't have to play with it. So we would love to hear exactly what you have to say about that, and we'll post it on the Golf Smarter blog. So please send in your reviews if you've won. There's a lot of people who've won stuff, so please send it in. Today's quote is provided by Juan Gutierrez of Tampa, Florida. He sent me an amazing compendium of quotes, which includes this one from The Hacker's Dictionary by Henry Beard and Roy McKee. The follow-through is the part of the swing that takes place after the ball has been hit, but before the club has been thrown. If you have any quotes, comments, or questions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Here's another radio baseball card.
If you ask me who the greatest baseball player in history of baseball was, I'd say Babe Ruth. I feel like I've been cheated as a baseball player not being able to see Babe Ruth play the game of baseball. I would have loved to play against Babe Ruth, but if I did, I'd probably be dead now, so maybe I shouldn't say that.
That was Pete Rose, the all-time hit leader in Major League Baseball history, and this is your invitation to subscribe to Radio Baseball Cards, hosted by the late Hall of Famer and network announcer Don Drysdale. Radio Baseball Cards is a series of amazing and sometimes amusing stories recorded in 1987, featuring some of the greatest players of the 20th century. Here's rookie Barry Bonds.
Sometimes I'm a boxer out on the baseball field, you know, and sometimes Eddie Murphy, or some days I'm a Clint Eastwood, you know, just really mad.
My first World Series, I was just a young kid in Chicago, and we played probably the greatest team of all time, the 1932 Yankees.
Collect a piece of baseball history that sounds as fresh today as it did 20 years ago. Subscribe to the premium edition podcast of Radio Baseball Cards at iTunes or at smarterpodcasts.com.